is my pleasure to present.
Good morning and welcome to the Carmichael Dave Show, starring Carmichael Dave, Jay Mars, and your phone calls on the Fire Wings hotline at 1-800-920-1140. Text in on the Jiffy Loop text line at 44-1140. Now, strap in and sit down. Here's Carmichael Dave.
Final regular appearance on the program, Dr. Richard Pan, after over a year, well over a year, of answering our questions. You know, listen, not everybody agrees with everybody. I get it. It's fine. It's why we do it. But good for him to come on. And, you know, it's not like we're always plugging his OnlyFans or something. He's doing this because he's a good dude.
Wait, he has an OnlyFans account? I'm intrigued.
That would be awesome if he did. Final appearance today at 8 o'clock, so we'll talk to him about that. I'm going to ask him about Disneyland. I am vaxxed, ready to go, but I am going into probably, is it safe to say that Disneyland is potentially going to be the COVID hotspot of the world? No capacity limits. No masks, no social distancing, everyone piled together from all over the country and the world.
I understand where you're coming from.
Tens of thousands.
And I think that's a fair thing to say. I will simply I have a rebuttal, a one-word rebuttal.
Yeah.
Texas.
I mean, Texas
bigger,
is spread out, dude.
Yeah, but don't stop them from, you know, 80,000 going to be in Dallas Stadium here very soon. Full stadium's packed.
Right, soon.
Yeah, like, what I'm saying is, Texas.
I am not joking. I am really seriously considering not doing Disneyland this weekend. I'm going to because
Dave,
I'm being pressured
we
into it.
We went through this yesterday.
I'm really considering. Yeah. No, I'm considering just saying
Disney
just
Dave.
My hands up.
I'm excited for you to be in Mouse Ears on Saturday. Disney Dave. Why haven't I thought of that earlier?
Yeah, wow, that's awesome. Soundgarden right now.
Soundgarden. Soundgarden. The cuts and clips that are catching our eye today. Soundgarden. It's time to go round the world with Soundgarden.
You can't even have fun nowadays without these jackasses trying to get you canceled and things like that. So, but still, just having fun talking about sports. I'm trying to hang on for another couple years till I'm 60. And then they can kiss my ass because I'm only working to 60. I've already told them that. We can't even have fun anymore. We've had fun all these years, and now all of a sudden in the last year and a half, everybody's trying to get everybody fired, and it really sucks.
That's Charles Barkley. By the way, here's a double shot of Charles Barkley before we talk about it.
They're coming for your head. You know, and a lot of our bosses are cowards. I said, context matters. They're like, context doesn't matter. I said, that's total BS. Context always has to matter. But now, if you crack a joke the wrong way, they're like, oh, no. You crossed the line.
It's a pendulum, man. It is a pendulum. And that's where we're at right now. The pendulum swings one way, mm-hmm. and now it's swinging the whole way over. Now, the ball on the pendulum, to further the analogy or metaphor or whatever the hell this is, it may not swing all the way back. The new normal may be a little more towards the middle, you know, on the swing, but then it'll start swinging again. At some point, there will be a counter to the counter.
I mean, and you already see it developing. It's in its infancy, obviously. But to your point, I think the middle is the correct answer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the pendulum should be heavy one way or the other. And that's where the context comes in. The context is what keeps it in the middle.
Right. There are things you should not be able to say.
I agree.
There are things and thoughts and things that, hey, freedom of speech, but not freedom from consequence.
And there's also things that you hear and you should understand. Dave Chappelle, to me, is the master of this when it comes to, like, yo, man, I'm saying this in the form of comedy.
Right.
Like, I don't actually hate or have these you know what I mean? Like, I do believe that context does matter.
None of this exists without social media.
100%.
It is what 100%. What people have learned, which is why I often say, and you go back to 2012 with the Kings and sports fans who haven't quite gotten this yet, but what people have learned is that in social media, you can take a relatively small group of people and amplify themselves through organization. So, you know, Charles Barkley, let's say he said something completely terrible.
Mm-hmm.
This group of people are not going to be the majority that want him gone, but what they know to do is they know to go after the sponsors and make themselves look huge. And the sponsors are going to go, yeah, we don't want any part of this.
Yeah.
We don't want any part of this.
100%. I couldn't agree more.
And at some point, there's the conversation about separating art and artist. And at some point, there's the conversation about what is acceptable for being offended. Mm-hmm. Anthony Jeselnik's one of my favorite comedians. He's, to me, slipped over the last few years. I love Anthony Jeselnik because he shocks me and surprises me with a lot of his jokes. And some of them are just brutalized. And by the way, some of them are things that have happened in my life or in the life of loved ones that I would never joke about. But I don't know. For me, personally, sometimes, not all the time, I like to laugh about really bad things because it helps me cope with them.
There's a lot of people. Dark humor is a thing.
Dark humor is great. Now, if it's dark humor, for example, about, I don't know, a race I'm not a part of, going through things I haven't gone through, I don't need to laugh about that.
Yeah, I agree.
But again, if it's dark humor about, I don't know, cancer. Cancer's not funny. I've been affected by it really badly. But sometimes you got to just laugh. Some people don't. I do. It helps me.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the right answer is, but
I mean, isn't that kind of comedy's whole thing, is it's a coping mechanism?
And when done correctly, I think it is. We're like baby giraffes right now in this part of the world, and mm-hmm. we're trying to figure out what is the right footing, and very brave people will help figure it out for us, and I'm certainly not one of those. Number two.
Soundgarden.
I definitely see it as Jimmy's the starter, but if Trey's ready to compete, I have no problem with it. I don't sit there and say, hey, no, we're not playing a rookie quarterback. We have to rest him the first year. And I don't really make any decisions like that until I actually have an opinion on it, and that'll take to how I see him in camp. And if he comes in and he's playing at a high level and we think he gives us the best chance to win, we wouldn't hesitate to do that.
Okay, here's the question, Jay. On a scale of 0 to 100%,
mm-hmm.
how much better does Jimmy Garoppolo have to be in training camp than Trey Lance in order to start?
That's a good question.
And do we also know what the deadline is to cut Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'd
be
so
very curious to find that out. Like, can they cut him in training camp? And
I believe so.
I need to know that answer, because it really does sound to me like the entire brain trust of the Niners would love for Trey Lance to come in and kick Jimmy Garoppolo's ass and be the starter.
I agree. And so I'm going to land right now on 75% better. And that's a lot.
That is a lot.
But you also just traded 3 first-round picks for this kid, so you need him. You need Garoppolo to be 75% better to justify it.
I think it's lower.
Really?
I think if Jimmy Garoppolo is like...
Do you think Kyle...
Let me ask you this. I think we're confusing. I think I'm asking the question in a confusing way. I'm saying I think if Jimmy Garoppolo isn't more than, let's say, 20% better than Trey Lance, I think Trey Lance... If Trey Lance comes in and he's only 20% worse than Jimmy Garoppolo, I think they start Trey Lance.
Okay, I can see that. Well, that was my question. Do you think they want to start Lance?
Yes.
You think they want Trey Lance to be the starter?
I think they would love to start Trey Lance. I think they would love to start getting returns on their investment right now, and I think they would love to cut Jimmy Garoppolo.
You know, I'm going to be 100% honest. I think you're actually correct.
Yeah.
I've agreed with you this entire Soundgarden, and I don't like it.
It's not good radio. It's absolutely not good radio.
It's awful.
You're supposed to call me an idiot and a moron.
Well, I'm supposed to create a fake counter argument.
Right.
What do you mean they want to start Trey Lance? Jimmy Garoppolo's the guy who got him to the Super Bowl. You don't want to start a guy that is only 19, 20, 21 years
old. I got you. I don't want to start that guy. What I would like to do, and what I think a lot of people would like to do, not just 49er fans, would be to start a brand new truck from our good friends over at Hoblet Dodge. The summer sales event is heating up along with the weather. By the way, 102 today and then a pair of 109s. Let's check in, by the way. Let's keep track of this and see if deep weather gets it wrong. I'm saying it will not reach those temperatures. Also, we have an update on the over-under on the Ben Simmons poll we put out yesterday. Did Jay Mars pick correctly on the under of 70%, or did he lose? Summer sales event from Hoblet Dodge, up to $5,000 off MSRP on the new 2021 Ram 1500 Bighorn or Laramie. 2.49% financing for 84 months. That's 7 years, kids.
That's thousands in available savings only at Hop on the new 2021 Ram 1525 and 3500s. They have all the selection, too. The hard-to-find Night Edition and limited models. The biggest selection of HD Rams in California. 300, over 300 sizes available. My goodness gracious. J.D. Power Customer First Award winners for excellence since 2019. Number three Ram dealer in all of America. See the full selection at Hoblet Rams Truck Center or HobletDodge.com. The only certified Ram Truck Center in the Sacramento Valley. No hassle, no pressure, ever dealership. With the best prices, the best selection, period.
That was nice.
Coming up next.
All righty, let's get to Three for Madness. By the way, we didn't get to Bryson DeChambeau. I'm talking about the old Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers thing. We'll do that a bit later. Kevin Durant, how good is he right now? How good is he all time? Did the USGA mess up on this U.S. Open pairing situation? And Reggie Miller made me think last night. I'd like to share the question with y'all. Coming up right after this.
One, two, three.
It's Three for Madness time. Three for Madness. Three questions, three answers.
One, two, three. Woo!
It's Three for Madness. Here's question one.
All right, coming up at 8:05, Dr. Richard Payne. Also, we got A's and Giants to get to. The Giants with a massive comeback. Got some background. I think some of which is public now, but I had that conversation I was telling you I was going to have yesterday with my friend in baseball. And I now understand a lot more as to how this is all going to go, or at least how it all should go with the sticky icky on these hands. We got a great on this day that is U.S. Open related. We'll get to the U.S. Open update at 8:30. A lot of stuff to get to. I don't want to pre-promote too much stuff. Did we get the YouTube fixed?
Yeah, it's a new stream starting.
Gotcha. Let's get those thumbs down in there, folks, or thumbs up or whatever. And yes, Chris, not for you, but for your wife, which I don't believe. In fact, I wouldn't. You need to send me some sort of proof. Chris tweeted us last night. Hey, my wife wants this burrito story about the runner that tested positive for a steroid and blamed it on a pork burrito. I actually went and put this in the stinking rundown.
Whether or not we get to it is always
for Chris.
Subject to... Yeah, and by the way...
For his wife.
And don't send no wedding ring. Like, anyone can pretend that. I need to see, like, the actual certificate.
Oh, you want... I'm not asking for proof he's married.
Oh, because I am.
Because somehow he bred, or somebody bred with him. I want proof that his wife truly cares about this and he's not just setting it up as a thing. By the way, did you know Chris paints his eyebrows on?
I did.
It's pretty crazy. All right. Question one.
All right, let's ask again. Is Kevin Durant the best remaining player in the postseason, and why is the answer yes?
I'm going to Venus Williams that back to you with a nice forehand. Who's better?
Nobody.
Nobody.
It's Kevin Durant.
It's nobody on Phoenix. Sorry, Chris Paul.
I made the Giannis argument the other day. I'm going to retract.
It's nobody on Utah. Sorry, Donovan Mitchell. You're hurt anyways.
Sorry, Joe Ingles.
Now. I think the only argument I could listen to, Joel Embiid's a conversation. Kawhi Leonard's the only one I could listen to because we're talking about in the playoffs.
Yeah, you said best remaining player.
Right, and Kawhi Leonard may be out the rest, as we told you earlier, of the Western Conference Finals. And a devastating blow, if there ever was one, to the Clippers with a knee injury he suffered in their last game. Yeah, it's Kevin Durant, and it was Kevin Durant before last night's game. It's Kevin Durant now. His comeback from his Achilles, everything, Kevin Durant's always been amazing. He was amazing at Texas. He's always been amazing. He's just at that level now where we're almost at the point, Jay, and it happens in almost every star's career, including, by the way, Michael Jordan, where they're awesome, and it's like, well, he can't win it all. And then they win it. Well, he can't sustain it. Well, he was with this other guy. And then as they get close to on the other end of their career, we're seeing it with Chris Paul this year. You're gonna be seeing it a lot with LeBron James. You already are. Where people go, oh, we're going to happen with Kobe. It happened big time with Kobe at the end of his career. Where everyone who spent all this time ripping him go, oh, my God,
this guy's going to be out of our NBA lives here soon.
I have this theory when it comes to old guys that people have a disdain for lack of a better word, whether it's a lot or a little, is as they grow older, the great ones always get people to love them at the end. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who it is. The great ones, people always, at the end, appreciate and love the greatness more than the things that they did not like about a player.
And people are fueled way too much on hating a player.
Really? I don't know where you would have seen that narrative at.
Number two.
Question two.
Oh, social media. Gotta love it. Anyways, did the USGA mess up by not giving us Brooks versus Bryson?
Here's the thing. Golf and the parties associated with golf, whether it's, you know, everyone around Royal Andrews, whether it's the PGA, whether it's the USGA, golf makes baseball look like the NBA times 12 when it comes to being progressive and forward thinking.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. And nowhere is that more apparent than in Augusta. But they just don't care what you think, and they don't care what's good for the game. Now, they may adjust a course. They may move the yardages around. They may make greens tougher or better. They may let rough grow or shrink.
I thought you were trying to say they're not baseball.
Yeah, they don't care. And so, yes, would Koepka, DeChambeau being paired together Thursday, Friday, would that have brought eyes? Yes. As a matter of fact, the real win here would have been to pair them up and then ask them if they'd be mic'd up.
Yeah. And this, to your point, they don't care. They should care. You should always be looking to grow your sport. And you should always be looking to put as many eyeballs on your sport as possible. And this is not some sort of manufactured... No, I don't think it's manufactured. I think these two really don't like each other.
I get it. But we sure are trying to do a great job at manu... Because we're so not used to this in golf.
Exactly.
And so everybody wants this conflict because that's what we love. We love conflict.
Conflict sells. And this is a legit conflict. They don't like each other.
Tiger Woods, you could argue Phil Mickelson. But Tiger Woods never really had conflict. Tiger Woods sold just fine. Tiger Woods built golf.
Yeah, who of those two is Tiger Woods?
Huh?
Neither of those two is Tiger Woods.
I understand that, but here's the thing with golf. They just don't care. You know what they want to do? They want to put on golf tournaments, and they want compelling golf, and they're going to make money, and they make money, and that's
Isn't
it.
Isn't that compelling golf?
I think
two of the biggest stars in the game don't like each other, paired at but arguably the biggest tournament.
But here's the reality. Is it compelling from an off-course storyline point of view? Yeah. Let me help everybody out on this one. If you pair Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka, here's what's going to happen. They're going to play 18 holes of golf. Kepka's going to be with his caddy. DeChambeau's going to be with his caddy. And then whoever the poor bastard, if it's a threesome, is going to be with his caddy. They're all going to play their games. They're not going to talk. And then at the end of the round, they're going to take off their hats. They're going to shake hands with each other and the caddy. And they're going to walk off. And then everyone's going to be like, oh, where's all this drama, man? There wouldn't be. People, honest to God, Jay, people think that if Koepka and DeChambeau were paired together, that somewhere around the sixth hole, one of them just throw down the driver and just start squirting sunscreen on the other guy. And the next thing you know, they're throwing fruit at each other and tackling each other and hair pulling and scratch. No, it's not going to happen. So we want this manufactured drama because a couple of guys get annoyed.
Well, the manufactured drama, again, it's just the idea that two guys hate each other.
Sure.
Two of the best golfers in the world.
I don't think they hate each other, by the way.
At the U.S. Open.
I don't think they hate each other.
I don't think they like each other.
I think they're annoyed. And you know what? I predict someday Brooks and Bryson.
I think, no, hold on. I'm sorry. I'm going to. Koepka's annoyed. I think DeChambeau thinks this is hilarious.
I think someday they're going to do something together and we're going to see like a Twitter video or something from them laughing about this. That's what I think. I think they're.
And sir, guess what? Huh? Hold on. That will be manufactured.
It will be manufactured. I'll give you one more. I know we got a break. I wouldn't put it out of the question at all, Jay. Out of the question at all. If Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau have texted at least once or twice with each other during this whole thing with laughing emojis. Really think about it, and you tell me that that's not a distinct possibility that they're laughing about this.
So you're saying they're friends?
I don't know that they're friends.
You're saying they're acquaintances.
I think they're enjoying this a little bit. We'll take a break.
Yeah! That was nice!
Coming up next.
All right, let's get to halftime. We'll also update not one, but two major breaking stories in the National Basketball Association that will have huge effects
on the remainder of the playoffs. And speaking of those playoffs, we'll get into those, especially Kevin Durant's Pantheon performance last night. Was it the greatest playoff performance we have ever, ever seen? All kinds of hyperbole on sports radio, and it continues next.
Got something to say? Text the show at 916-339-1140. The Carmichael Dave Show returns now.
All right, we'll get to halftime in a second. We'll get to Dr. Richard Pan, his final regular appearance on this program at 8:05. We clean up some stuff we haven't gotten a chance to clean up yet. A lot of breaking news in the NBA today, and we'll get to that. One thing we haven't talked about, Nikola Jokic. This is not an NBA story. This is an Olympic story. He announced in a statement today, he will not be joining the Serbian national basketball team for at least the Olympic qualifying tournament. And it sounds like, according to some reports, even if they qualify, they're expected to, he's not playing in the Olympics.
Did you hear that collective like sigh of relief from the entire city of Denver?
Speaking of sports around the world, I don't know if you saw this. Did you happen to see this? Will ring a bell if you saw it. Did you happen to see Ronaldo's press conference yesterday?
Sure did.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
I was going to say so to Coca-Cola.
Aha. He sat down for his press conference at Euro 2020. And he saw two bottles of Coca-Cola on the dais in front of him, on the little you know, table. Now, Coca-Cola is an official sponsor of Euro 2020 and has been for decades. Well, Ronaldo saw those bottles of Coca-Cola, and he grabbed them after looking at them menacingly and moved them out of the camera view. He then said, drink water, holding up a bottle of water, which he could have at least held up like a bottle of Dasani, which is a Coca-Cola product, but he didn't. Well, these have real consequences, because that move, well, let's not say it's directly tied to it, but it's directly tied to it. Coca-Cola's shares yesterday dropped 1.6% to $55.22 a share. What does that mean? That means their market value dropped $4 billion.
Whoops!
$4 billion.
All because of Ronaldo wanted you to be healthier. Damn him.
I mean, this is not...
I'm sorry, I read that. I thought it was the funniest damn thing.
I loved it. France midfielder, Manchester United player Paul Pogba, on Tuesday, removed a bottle of Heineken beer that had been placed in front of him at a news conference following their win over Germany in Munich. Pogba is a practicing Muslim. He does not drink alcohol. He removed the bottle when he sat down to speak to the media after he was named the man of the match. I don't know what Heineken shares did. I've seen this before. I won't say who it is, but I played with somebody, a local celebrity y'all know very, very, very well, and we were paired up in a golf tournament a few years back, and somebody wanted to take a picture with our foursome, and and it was somebody from, and I won't mention the company, but it was somebody from a local brewing company. And they asked us all to hold a bottle. They were giving away beer. And say, hey, could you hold the bottle and let's take a picture? And this person said, this person who is as polite as you can imagine, as easygoing as you imagine, could imagine, very politely declined. And I watched this person very carefully. And I said, listen, I got nothing against it. I just don't want to, kids are going to look at this picture. I just don't want to set the example one way or the other. I don't want to be associated with that. It's fine. No offense. It was very nice about it. I thought about it. I went, that's a different level of thinking. I'm just like, here's beer. Take a picture. I don't even think about that.
I could just see you, though, slapping the beer out of said beer guy's hand and reaching into your bag and, I'm an A&W guy.
I mean, listen, not going to lie. I gave the beer back afterwards because they were handing a little shot glass.
Me and my beer, I'm not going to have.
It's a very popular local brewery.
Hey, listen, popular local brewery. If you're handing anybody your beer,
yeah,
don't ask for it back.
They didn't. But what they had these little shot glasses of beer.
Right, but I would hope they said, hey, yeah, there's the shot glasses of beer. That one right there is yours.
That's exactly. No, they okay. did. They did. And they actually asked if we wanted more to take with us. But I tried the little shot glass just to taste it.
Okay, next time that happens, say yes.
It tasted like the ground.
That's fine.
It tasted like I was drinking a Christmas tree.
Was it organic?
I don't know. It was some IPA.
I am not an IPA
guy. It just tasted like pine needles and grossness. Meanwhile, my wife's got a fridge full of Pliny the Elder, which everyone freaks out over. And again,
a lot easier to get these days than it used to be. Used to be really hard to get.
Yeah, no, you can get that. They added that. Well, I won't say the place. But
there's a way.
There is.
I'm not giving out the method.
All right.
Because I also have a significant other who likes Pliny the Elder, and I try to keep her happy.
Soundgarden was earlier.
Yeah, it was halftime.
Let's do halftime.
You guys suck. That's how my coach used to get me fired up at halftime.
It's halftime. As we get into the second half of the show, here's what we've been looking at so far and what we'll be talking about next.
Oh, the San Francisco Giants were down 7-0, 8-0 at one point. 7-0 at 7-0. One point. Yeah, and oh my goodness. Carl Yastrzemski's grandson, or should I say Carl Yastrzemski, is he now Mike Yastrzemski's grandpa?
At least for a night he was.
I think so, too. Bottom eight, bases juiced. Giants down 3, and it's every kid's dream.
Yastrzemski, high drive, down the right field line. It is gone! Into San Francisco Bay, a grand slam. And the Giants have gone ahead 9-8.
I want to say this, and I want to be very clear about it. That is the great Dave Fleming. That was a perfect call. 10 out of 10. Didn't need to do much other than just show some emotion and make it happen, and he did it. I have zero problems with that call. As a Giants fan, I couldn't help thinking, God, I wish Kipe was on that call. How insane would Dwayne Kuiper have been? And again, take this moment to send even more well wishes and thoughts and prayers and all that to Dwayne Kuiper and his family. And the Giants just, man, this game was, in fact, our Christina Werner, part of Deep Weather. Christina Werner, local weather person, noted Kings fan, noted Giants fan. She tweeted at some point during the game. She goes, somebody let me know if I need to go back to the Giants game because I don't have any reason to watch right now.
She tweeted that or you tweeted that?
No, she tweeted that. No, I didn't. Listen, like I said, baseball matters in September. Right now, it's just all fun and hijinks. Giants win, Giants win, Giants win. 9-8. Please trade for a closer. That's all I'm saying. Get to work, Farhan.
Get another bat, too.
That's fine. Number two.
Halftime.
Center field bolt, 2 or 3 steps toward left center. The infield is slightly to pull, and Suzuki deep in the box, a slightly open stance. And the 0-2 delivery is swung on, bounce back at third, backhand bobbled. Chapman picks it up, rolls around, throws, and he gets him. A no-look, whirling throw across the diamond by Chapman after initially bobbling the ball on a short hop, preserving the 6-4 win for the A's. And for the first time since 2019, the A's are 15 games over 500. Again, the final, the A's 6, the Angels 4.
That was a weird thing.
I'd like to thank the Oakland A's for providing that audio clip.
The Oakland Athletics win their 5th in a row. The Astros need to quit winning, though. They've won 2 in a row. They are still 2.5 games behind the Athletics.
Quickly, coming up today in Once in a Blue Moon, I have a statistic about the Giants' opponent last night.
Oh, really? The Snakes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Or the Serpentines?
Serpentines.
Did you see them release those jerseys?
I did.
It's so hideous. Really bad.
By the way, the Dodgers keep winning. I don't like that either. They remain 1 game behind the Giants. That is a...
Padres 5 back of the Giants. Did you have that on June 16th?
Nope. Still waiting for the bubble to pop, but it's fun to watch. Meanwhile, the Pirates have lost 9 in a row.
The Pittsburgh ones?
No, the Canadian ones.
Okay. I hate Canadian Pirates.
The Caribbean ones. They've lost 9 in a row. Halftime.
Halftime.
The Nets come back from 17 down in this crucial Game 5, and they beat the Bucks. And the Nets are one win away from advancing to the conference final. They beat the Bucks 114 to 108. A 49-point triple-double for Kevin Durant is the difference. Brooklyn will go to Milwaukee for Game 6 and a chance to win the series.
Reggie Miller tweeted last night.
Oh, boy.
And I want to say for the record, as I did say on Twitter,
a thought-provoking tweet.
I thought it was. You know, I'm not attracted necessarily, as some people are, to the voice less heard, the opinion less allowed. If it's a bad opinion, it's a bad opinion. I am also all for piling on Reggie Miller. Really, I am, and history shows that. I have receipts. But here's what he tweeted last night. So I'm just going to throw this out there to see what the responses will be. If you're Steve Nash and the Nets, would you sit James Harden and Kevin Durant in Game 6 because of the heavy minutes tonight? Push all your chips to the center of the table for Game 7. Now, listen, this tweet blew up, obviously. And the resounding response was, Reggie, you hit your head on a table. To be clear, I wouldn't do that. Let's just full stop. But I understand the logic in it. I understand where Reggie was coming from. I understand why he asked the question. He's saying James Harden is obviously not right. And it took possibly the greatest performance ever in playoff history for the Nets to beat the Bucks at home. And they put heavy minutes on Kevin Durant, played every minute of the game. That to me is not the top minute story. The top minute story is James Harden was doubtful this time yesterday. Was upgraded to doubtful, and then plays 46 minutes. So if you take emotion out of the equation, you just look at it as a black-white situation, you go, well, okay, listen. What are the odds we're going to win Game 6? Not great. Milwaukee will be the favorite, and they will be the favorite. Do we take a risk in possibly further injuring James Harden, putting an extremely heavy load on Kevin Durant? And I don't even know what Kyrie Irving's status is, if he could make it back for Game 7, but hoo boy, if he could. I doubt it. So the idea there is, listen, if the odds, let's play the straight-up odds. If the odds are you're going to lose Game 6, why not completely rest your guys, those two guys? Play your other guys enough to where Giannis has to play 35 and the Bucks have to play. And then you go all out Game 7 at home with a rested Kevin Durant, a rested and possibly healthier James Harden. I'd need to have a long talk with the trainers and say, hey, listen, could 2 days of no basketball, 3 days of no basketball, could this make a sizable difference for James? And if the answer is yes, yeah, I consider it. I do. I understand where Reggie was coming from. You play to win the game. I get that. And a lot of the responses I saw were, why would you sit Game 6 instead of just win it? Oh, well, my God. Great point. Win game profit. I understand. Yes, if it was that simple. But they lost Game 3. They lost both games in Milwaukee. They're almost certainly going to lose Game 6. And so whether you lose by 1 or whether you lose by 30, it's still a loss. You don't get partial wins. So would you rather have, do you have a better chance if you accept that Game 6 is going to be a loss? And that's the key to this conversation. If you accept that it's almost certainly going to be a loss, would you rather have a rested Harden and a rested Durant and a possible return of Kyrie Irving in Game 7 at home in front of that Brooklyn crowd? Or do you just play it to play it and now you're going into Game 7 with no rest for anyone and everyone's dog tired? Which gives you ultimately, the question is, which process gives you a better chance at advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals? Fortunately, we live in a sports world. You play to win the game, and there's no black and white, or there's no gray area, and there's no time, there's no nuance. You play to win the game. What does it say to your team if you just throw a game? You can't do that in the play. No, yes, you can. You can do all of that. It's okay. And if you advance to the Eastern Conference Finals and you win, and then you win the finals, nobody's going to care. You can do all of that. There's nothing in the rules that says you can't. You have load management all the time in the regular season. I understand this is far different. I'm not saying I'd do it. I'm saying I wouldn't do it. But asterisk, I would have a heavy conversation with my training staff. And hopefully my training staff is qualified enough to give me straight answers that are accurate. And if they tell me that I'm getting 10% of James Harden in game six and that I will likely get 60 to 70% of James Harden in game seven, if it's something like that.
Yeah,
I'm,
that's a big if. That's
it's
not
a huge if.
That's not a thing.
Could be.
You watched the guy last night.
I did.
There's no way he is going to be back 60 to 70% more healthy if he rests one more game. That's why it's so absurd to even think that.
I would say this.
If that were to be the case, right? Uh-huh. If that were to be the case, then yeah, for sure. If you say, hey, sit hard in six, he's going to be back 60 to 70% more for seven. Of course.
I take exception with one thing you said, and I know it's a nuance, but I think it's important in the conversation. You said there's no way that happens if Harden sits one more game. I want to change what you said, and it's accurate. We're not talking about James Harden sitting one more game, though we are. We're talking about James Harden sitting three more days, and that's an important difference.
It is, but the grander point of he being that much more healthy for game seven is not. No, you can't put your hands
three
up.
3 days?
Dude, look at him.
I'm not a doctor.
Like, I know you're not a doctor, but you have common sense.
I have common sense in this. You know, we should call Pete Youngman. Because I don't know what the status
David,
of his hamstring is.
You don't go from having your hamstring held up by tape and then resting 3 days and it's no longer being held up by tape. Hamstring injuries don't heal like that.
You're correct that you're not getting, and I'm not saying you're getting a 100% James Harden.
I'm not saying
you're getting a 70% James.
But no, but the thing you said was he'd be 60 to 70% more healthy. It's not a thing. 10%, okay.
Three days?
Three, dude.
I mean, the guy rested for what, 5 days and is now back playing?
He rested for 5 days and you saw what he was back playing as. He was a shell.
So here's the thing.
He's going to be a shell regardless.
Then let me take what you're saying and let's go with it as fact. Then let me make this statement. Can we agree if I, for the sake of argument, take what you're saying as gospel?
Mm-hmm.
Can we also mutually agree that he would be in some form of better shape after 3 days of rest than 1 day of rest?
Yes.
Okay. Full stop. I don't know, and we don't know what that percentage is.
But that's my whole argument.
Okay, I understand that.
But so, I do agree, yes, he would, common sense says yes.
So here's my question. Do you see a reasonable chance that on 1 day's rest, to your own point, James Harden is not going to improve much based on what we saw yesterday to what we will see tomorrow? Take into account the performance Kevin Durant had last night, which by many people, with no hyperbole, is being considered amongst, if not the greatest playoff performance ever. Do you see, I want to find the right word, because reasonable isn't the right word.
Plausible?
Plausible is, no, because that means there's
possibly.
Those both imply that there's a chance.
Okay.
Of course. Do you see a better than 50% chance, considering how James Harden will be tomorrow, considering what Kevin Durant had to do last night, and considering the fact that they're going from Brooklyn to Milwaukee, do you see a legit chance that Brooklyn wins tomorrow?
Yes, I do.
Wow. Interesting.
I think the other side of that equation.
Oh, by the way, and Budenholzer has the opportunity to adjust.
He did last night, too.
He didn't. I get it. But he's going to have 2 days of getting his ass kicked, and very obvious things. You pick James Harden up line to line, and you double and triple Kevin Durant.
But
you put Giannis on him.
But we also have seen head coaches. Uh-huh. Budenholzer is very guilty of this, of not making those, like, obvious adjustments, right? Because they're so entrenched in what has worked all season long.
He has to.
I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you that he has to. I just don't know if he will or if he will for the whole game.
If he doesn't, then the other side
of this equation is we forget what losses like that do to a psyche of a team, especially a team like Milwaukee, who for now three seasons has had these expectations.
Sure.
The two seasons prior to this one have had this expectation that they have not lived up to. And last night, every single one of those demons crept back into this series.
Sure.
And I think we really don't We really underestimate what those things do to a team psyche.
Yeah, but they also went to Milwaukee back home down 2-0 with all those demons, and they just got blown up by 39 points.
I agree. I disagree with that.
40 those, points.
I disagree. I think the 40-point blowout meant less than being up by 17 in a game five when the other team is bleeding and you smell blood.
I think Milwaukee's going to be hungry as hell at home. I think that crowd's going to get behind them.
I think Milwaukee will win game six. I'm not disagreeing with that. What I'm saying is I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I think that game will be closer than you think.
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion because I do think there's a possibility. But I would put it at something like 25%.
Okay.
Okay.
But I'll take that if I'm Brooklyn on the road.
But then the question...
Because I have Kevin Durant.
But then the question then becomes based on what Reggie Miller proposed. Is a 25%, is a 1-4 chance. Is 25% chance of winning this game on the road worth the miles on Kevin Durant, worth the miles on a hurt James Harden?
Again, I believe it is because you don't want to give Milwaukee any momentum. You don't want there to be a game seven. And if you have a 1/4 chance to me... Good enough.
Is there something to be said about the fact that, hey, if we can't win a game seven on our home floor, we don't deserve to be in the Eastern Conference Finals?
For Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I mean, that's part of it. Listen, if we can't win a game seven at home, we don't deserve to be here anyway. So,
but the other side of that coin is, hey, we did deserve to win. We just had injuries galore that caught up with us.
You're trying to tell me in a playoff situation that a really bad game can carry over and affect a team at home in a game seven?
When you've had these issues, yes. You know what's interesting? You say you wouldn't do it, but now you're saying you would do it.
No, I'm saying I think
no,
about it.
No, you're not. You just said I wouldn't do this, but now you've made every argument to do it. Make the argument not to do it.
The argument not to do it is the following. You have Kevin Durant, you always have a chance, number one. Number two, it's a terrible message to send to your players. Number three, you don't want to have a game seven even if it's at your home.
Okay, you're making my argument.
Well, no, of course, I'm saying you're making the argument. And I think that slipped under your radar, that line about, are you telling me that events in a game six could then further affect a team in the playoffs for a home game seven?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know.
I get where you're going with that
now. We've seen that before.
And that's my point. Yeah. And when you have a history of losing when it's on the line,
it
matters.
I think that's just caught in my teeth this week. And a lot of it is NBA Twitter and social media. It's like the Ben Simmons, Kate Cunningham thing. Mm-hmm. I don't mind if you say you don't want to make that trade. I don't mind if you say that it's too much money and some of the points Doug brought up yesterday, even though he would have made the trade. I don't mind that. When you say something's outlandish and ridiculous, that's where I have a problem with things that aren't outlandish and ridiculous. My whole point, and we got a break, my whole point about what Reggie said, I wouldn't do it. I agree with you. But the piling on to that question to me was not deserved by the question itself. I think it's a legit thing to think about.
Let me ask you this. Does that question land better if he takes Kevin Durant's name out of it and says, rest James Harden?
I think that question lands better if Kenny Smith tweets it. I think that
But I want you to, but the first part, just say rest, because I think that's more of a legitimate.
And he didn't even mention Kyrie Irving, and I don't know what the deal is there. Anyways, we'll take a break.
Yeah! That was nice!
Coming up next.
All right, Dr. Richard Pan, his final appearance regularly on this program. We will thank him and get some thoughts now that California is reopened.
Did we send him that fruit basket?
It's on the way.
Cool.
We'll also get into a little bit of baseball as well, including how this whole sticky thing is going to get enforced. Found a little bit about that out yesterday. U.S. Open update at 8:30, along with Once in a Blue Moon with Jay Mars. A lot coming up this final hour next.